Hello, Brooklyn, how you doing? Where you going? We cannot come to. And if I can, I'm gonna be your man. You can be my lady and have my baby and drive my car. You got me crazy. So however you going, baby, where you going? Just take me, cause I'm so taken. If you take it, I'm just saying, baby, I'm just saying.
Hello, Nets fans. How are you doing? We are doing great. I think you know why. This is the Russell and Fro podcast. Russell here, Fro there, Brett the man bun, Garofalo, accompanied on the winds by my esteemed friend and colleague, Carl the Talent Jackson. Man, what a season. Hopefully this lasts forever. It's not going to. Trying to savor every second. Games that I miss, I'm rewatching them. But as always, let's start on a light note before we really dive in to the meat and potatoes of this thing, or whatever vegan cuisine you want to throw out there that's more with the times, the Beyond Burger and, I don't even know, Satan combination here. Carl, how are you?
I think it's the Beyond Meat and Potatoes. And Brett, I am doing great. I'm glad that you mentioned the wins, you know, in your lead in there, because I've been trying to think of nicknames for the Nets Big Three. And, you know, I couldn't help but think, sort of, if you were to assign a natural element to each of these guys, I mean, Kyrie Irving would kind of be like the wind, right? Because, you know, it's something that you can kind of take for granted. But when it gets going, it's extraordinarily powerful, like we saw last night. I feel like Kevin Durant is more like a fire, because he's somebody that I feel like from the first moment that man discovered fire, they knew how powerful and how dangerous it was. And I feel like that's been Durant his entire career. And he's just been exactly who we thought he was going to be sort of the entire time, which is kind of incredible. And so, you know, if you put those two together along with James Harden, I think you get girth, wind, and fire. So that's how I'm doing.
Hey, Earth works too, because he might be incapable of leaving the Earth at this weight.
Well, he's run heliocentric offenses for a while, and I have to say, dude, I have heard this, I've seen clips, I have read this, but watching last night, like, that dude is stout in the post, defending the post. I mean, I know he gets you know, a lot of disparagement for his defense, and I understand why. And I, you know, I went back and rewatched the fourth quarter, and we'll get into some of my observations sort of sprinkled throughout this conversation. But watching him just bang with Kawhi, or there were a few possessions where they had him guard Serge Ibaka in the post yesterday, and I thought those were fantastic possessions, because it was like, A, if you're getting Ibaka to post up anyway, that's already sort of a win. And then Harden, like, did a very good job defending him and got a couple stops heading into halftime. So I really enjoyed my friend Yappy, who is a big Nets fan. I don't know if he's listening, but he should be, or not. I don't care. You know, do what you do. Do what you do, fam. You know, he's talking about how he's got a rugby-like physique, which I think is totally makes sense, because, like, with the beard, I mean, he looks like a rugby player. He looks like he's probably, you know, funneled a couple beers out of a shoe. And just the way he uses his body is incredible. And I was reminded today, Marv Albert in the first in the Bucks game. And despite the fact that, and I made this joke on Twitter that, you know, Marv generally seems like, especially in this sort of disconnected state, like he has just accidentally flipped the channel to a different game and, you know, is broadcasting like DePaul versus Purdue or something, thinking that it's Nets Bucks. But in the first game, he had the best description of James Harden that I have heard all year, which is basically, which was that James Harden is the fastest player in the league at slowing down. And I think that's he's like the Jamie Moyer of, you know, humans, I guess, except that Jamie Moyer was human, too. So I don't know. We're like off the rails so far already. Brett, why'd you let me talk?
I don't know, but I love that we have a Seattle Mariners reference less than 2 minutes into the podcast. So I'm into that. And I really think that John Mayer said it best about James Harden. His body's made of Wonder Bread. And that's what we're looking at. But here's a real question that, again, if we're off the rails, let's just dive into this, because we didn't plan on talking to this. What players would you not feel comfortable with James Harden defending in the post, even for just a couple possessions in the playoffs? There's really not many if you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, Embiid would be the one that comes to mind. But exactly. Honestly, like, I don't hate that. I don't think that's your plan A there. But, you know, if that happens off of a switch, that's okay. And I just have flashbacks from that Philly series a couple years ago where I was like, please let Embiid post up Jared Allen, not because it's not going to be successful, but because that shot is only going to result in 2 points, not three. I would also love to see a Kyle Lowry, James Harden post up fest because I feel like that would be like everybody would just get Bruce Springsteen tickets because it would just be old man at the Y all over the place.
That would be incredible.
Uncontrollable.
You're playing the Sixers. You've got Kyrie Irving posting up Seth Curry. I mean, barbecue chicken, Kenny, right? I mean, that's it right there. Listen,
absolutely.
Joel Embiid's in the best shape of his career. He's going to drop 30 on you in the playoffs anyway. So why not have him do it against Harden? Nets go small. Let's see how that series goes. I'm excited for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think with that, let's get into what we're going to talk about today. So we are going to take a look at what we feel like is the closing and best lineup for the Nets and kind of use that as a springboard to talk about the overall rotation. And from there sort of say, okay, you know, what are the rotation spots that the Nets are going to be looking to upgrade? We know that they've made a couple free agent signings and we'll talk about those here in a second. You know, what are those spots that they're going to upgrade? And then, you know, based on sort of what we've heard as rumors, what we see as, you know, potential buyout candidates or available free agents or potential trades, you know, how can they go about filling those roles? Because I don't know if you've heard, Brett, the Nets are not in the running right now to be the best defensive team of all time.
You know, I've been trying to stay off of Nets Twitter, and by stay off of Nets Twitter, I mean constantly logged into the Russell and Pro handle, doom scrolling through all of the takes on the Nets defense. So yes, I've heard that.
So I've been out there mixing it up with the people, and it's been fantastic. I'm going to get a sweet recipe for blender pancakes. I'm pretty excited about that. But I think... lost my train of thought. I was thinking about those blender pancakes. What I was going to say is I think that, you know, with Twitter and sort of the way that this discussion is happening, you know, it's not that it's wrong, right? I mean, the Nets, you know, since Harden has joined the team, I know this was true before the Clippers game. I don't know if it's still true. I assume it still is. The Nets have, you know, a offensive rating that would be the best all time and a defensive rating that would be the worst all time. I think it puts them in an interesting position to try to be like the polar inverse of the 04 Pistons, which is like really like when you go through and you look at sort of where those team, you know, where finalists and finals winners have ranked in terms of like offensive rating and defensive rating, the 04 Pistons are like a clear outlier because their offense was so bad. But you know, their defense was so good, and partially their offense was so bad because they bolstered it midseason with the acquisition of Rasheed Wallace. So I think from Nets fans' perspective, a lot of what people are thinking is, you know, the Nets are going to be title contenders because yes, they might have what might be the worst defense of all time, although somehow better than the Sacramento Kings of this year, but they're going to bolster it and they are going to improve it with a midseason acquisition. So to that end, in terms of filling the two roster spots that they were legally required to by the NBA, the Nets signed Norvell Pell to a non-guaranteed deal through the end of the season. And they also signed Iman Shumpert, who I would have told you was like 47 years old. Like when people were talking about potentially signing Jamal Crawford, like I would have thought that Iman Shumpert was his age, but he's actually 30, which is insane. So they signed those two guys. I could not get a read on whether Shumpert's contract was guaranteed or not. But they are both going to come in. And so we'll talk about them in a second. One fun fact I did pick up from Nets Twitter, Brett. So don't say they never did anything for you. Shouts to at Playboy Claxton for finding this in the podcast, as well as at Jay from BK, who had mentioned it actually a week ago in Alex Schiffer's Athletic chat. But the reason that Iman Shumpert was released last year, because you remember he was released, you know, he was basically brought in to fill the Wilson Chandler roster spot until Chandler came back from his PED suspension. He was released kind of before before Chandler came back, and it was a little bit mysterious as to why. The reason was because he tore his MCL and sort of quietly left the team to have surgery and, you know, has rehabbed and come back. So I think, you know, obviously not a great three-point shooter, but somebody who brought presence and energy in defense on that side of the ball. I guess, do you have any thoughts on those signings overall?
My thoughts are preparations A through G failed, so the Nets have moved on to preparation H. Now, I have nothing against Amon Shumpert and Norvel Pelle. Is that how you say it? Am I saying it right? Also,
I think it's just Pell, right?
Just Pell. Yeah, it's probably just Pell. Norvel Pell. It sounds much better if you rhyme it. It makes me think of Carvel cakes and Carvel ice cream. Just delicious. Miss that. Anyway, both of those guys, in my opinion, are holdovers, regular season minutes eaters, and if you get into the playoffs and either of them are playing meaningful minutes to the Nets, for the Nets, then you're either in garbage time, somebody's in foul trouble, or something has gone horribly, horribly wrong, and the Nets are having a no good, terrible, very bad day. Now, I think that it would be incredibly useful in the regular season to get DeAndre Jordan some rest, because if he's going to be looking as spry as he has been come May, we're probably going to need to sit him a couple games, maybe not play him 25 minutes a night. That'll be helpful. And then Amon Shumpert, you know, he's going to be taking some minutes from Kyrie Irving and from James Harden and Kevin Durant. And in the regular season, that's okay, because we've had some nights where they're playing 40-plus minutes a game. And even though we're load-managing those guys, that is not the best. Now, that being said, both of those guys are going to come in. They're going to play hard. They're going to be good chemistry guys. They seem like great folks. Amon's got the connection with some of those guys that he's played with before. Also, great find on the MCL injury, because I remember Nets Twitter being ablaze when it seemed like we elected not to bring Amon Shumpert back. And to have a reason for that seems to clear up some of that confusion. But I think, hey, listen, they're going to come in. They'll play hard. They're not going to take anything off the table. Amon Shumpert hits a couple threes, he'll be fine. Pell blocks a couple shots, doesn't mess anything up, he'll be fine.
So I think you've maybe answered one of the questions that I was going to ask. But to me, I think of kind of this team getting to, you know, it's funny that you sort of phrased it in terms of like preparations A through H. And obviously, I know you're making a joke there, but we had a conversation a couple weeks ago about like, you know, what's plan A versus plan B. And I think that the way to think about it is actually, you know, makes more sense, not to go all sort of work mode on you, but to think of it as like, you know, software release, where, you know, what the eventual form that you want to be at in the playoffs, like that's not plan A. And then if you can't get that done, you're looking at plan B. That's like release, you know, 3.0 or 4.0 or something like that. And this is the 1.0 version. And sort of each step, each iteration, you know, you're going to go through players and guys and, you know, look at sort of, okay, how can we improve this team? You know, can either of these guys crack the rotation? I think there are two fairly available spots, and we'll talk about sort of what the current rotation is. But I think, you know, just, you know, any Nets fan could tell you there are two sort of fairly upgradable spots in the minutes that had been recently played, although not last night, by Reggie Perry, and then the minutes that have been played by Timothy Luau-Cabarro. So, like, I think there's opportunity there to get minutes and have a positive impact. So, you know, that's one thing. And even if that means, you know, you're saving your powder in terms of the disabled player exception that the Nets have, in terms of the taxpayer mid-level that the Nets have for the buyout market. So I definitely think that it's, you know, it's fine to sort of look at it as there's another move to be made. But let's look at this as sort of like the first iteration. So I think the thing where it makes the most sense to start is, let's talk quickly about what their current rotation is. And to start that out, I think we start with their sort of best and what I would consider closing lineup. And it's somewhere where you and I have disagreed a little bit. So why don't we start there? I mean, Brett, so I'll tee it up by just saying that my sort of thought on the best in closing lineup is the lineup that Steve Nash has been closing with, which is Kyrie Irving, James Harden, Joe Harris, Kevin Durant, and Jeff Green. I think we're pretty aligned on the big three and Green at the as a small ball five, but you are an advocate for getting more defense in there.
I am. I think I'm an advocate for Joe Harris isn't as important as we think to the closing lineup. You throw anybody in there with the big three, that's not a net negative, and things are going to go well, and you can really play the matchups. And I think we have a ton of time over the regular season to really see who's got good chemistry with those folks and who can truly either elevate the defense or is that enough of a boon to make it worthwhile to drop off extreme floor spacing with Joe Harris out there. So listen, am I saying that throwing Bruce Brown in the closing lineup is better than Joe Harris? Potentially. I'm not really sure, but I'm saying that that could be a possibility because we have such elite creators. That bit of floor spacing and that knockdown shooting ability doesn't negatively affect those folks to take it away because they're going to be taking tough shots when defense is locking anyway. We're going to be playing the best defenses in the NBA, theoretically, when we're talking about this. So is Joe Harris's gravity really going to affect things at that point? I'd say in the regular season, probably, but it might be helpful to have a little bit more grittiness, somebody moving around the court, making weird cuts, a player that you wouldn't really expect to be in certain spots out there. And that's why I've still got a little love in my heart for Bruce Brown. But quite frankly, who the heck, who else is even eligible for this closing lineup, right? I mean, you've got KD at the five, you're throwing Jeff Green out there. I don't think you're throwing DeAndre Jordan out there. So are we just talking Bruce Brown and Joe Harris? Like, is anybody else even in consideration?
Yeah. So that's a good question. So, I guess a couple things sort of working backwards. I would say DeAndre Jordan could be a consideration in very, very, very specific matchups. And he would rotate in for Jeff Green. So I could see that potentially, in a matchup with Philadelphia, you know, as a bigger guy to counteract Embiid. I also think probably in that instance, you might want like a Jeff Green in there as well in Harris's place to play against Ben Simmons. But that's kind of a weird sort of fluky matchup situation.
I mean, like you can see it off, like an offense defense type situation where you're throwing DeAndre in there because you know you have a timeout. You can throw Jeff Green or somebody else back in there in his place.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, I don't really think there's anybody else on the lineup in the lineup aside from Bruce Brown who would merit consideration, with the possible exception of Iman Shumpert. And we can talk about that in a second. I did want to just say I dove into a couple things to just get some numbers on this because I think it'll help us kind of contextualize what we're talking about from a statistical perspective. So I guess a couple thoughts that I had initially were, Brown is a little bit smaller than he's a little bit shorter than Harris, and so my first thought was like, okay, they're not playing him with Kyrie because you know that basically gives you two smaller guards that you don't want to pick on. When I looked at his NBA DraftNet profile, I discovered two extremely important things. One is he's actually, even though he's an inch or so shorter than Harris, he is a 6'9 wingspan to Harris's 6'6, so he can actually defend bigger in addition to sort of being I think a more sort of stout like body defender in the post. So that's thing number one. Thing number two, and this is extraordinarily important, and had been talking about it on Twitter with some folks as well, I did discover that he went to high school at Vermont Academy, Brett. So, you know, absolutely looking to get more Green Mountain connections into the lineup. So I did want to shout that out.
So you're looking to inject a little Green Mountain coffee, a little shot of life into that.
Exactly. A little energy. I did a North Country Vermont accent. A Southern one is probably more like a Wahlberg kind of situation. But anyway, wanted to throw that one out there. So I also pulled numbers on what those lineups have looked like. And interestingly enough, the lineup that sort of we had suggested in terms of the big three, Bruce Brown and Jeff Green, has not played very many minutes together. the lineups with the lineup that Nash has been closing with, big three, Joe Harris and Green, over five games. So these are stats for all the games since the Harden trade. So the past 10 games, that lineup has played together in five of them, 72 minutes. They have 125.7 offensive rating, 108.7 defensive rating. It's your second best net rating of any lineup. And I'll get to who's first in a second. And then looking at Bruce Brown lineups, like with the kind of a 10 minute filter on it, interestingly, there are a couple lineups that he has played on that are negatives, frankly, because their defense hasn't been that good. I don't think that means his defense hasn't been good. I just think he's in a little bit of kind of like these weird transitional lineups as the bench is like sort of reverting back to the starters that have gotten smaller minute amounts. In terms of lineups that have done really well, there is a Bruce Brown, Joe Harris, Landry Shamet, James Harden, DeAndre Jordan lineup, which is over 9 minutes. I think that lineup played mostly yesterday in the Clippers game and kind of keyed a pretty big run back. So maybe this is, there's only a one game sample on it, so it's a little bit of maybe an over index. But that lineup was plus 60 per 100 possessions.
Throw them in.
The best lineup over this sample with a minimum of 10 minutes is actually Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, DeAndre Jordan.
Oh, God.
Joe Harris and Bruce Brown. So sort of their powers combining there has made sense. So, like, I think the reason that I feel like it's like this is an important exercise to do, and we were talking about this a little bit before we started, is like, I mean, to be like a little bit pedantic, there's five guys on a basketball court, right? You've got three of those slots taken between Kyrie, KD, and Kevin Durant. You're more or less giving the fifth one, we'll say, to either DeAndre Jordan, another center, if they were to bring one in that could play him off the floor, or Jeff Green as a small ball five. So really, it's just this last slot. And I think to your point earlier, the only guy on this team that really merits consideration for sort of usurping Joe Harris's minutes there is Bruce Brown. And I still feel like I know it's tempting to look at this in sort of like an additive fashion of like, we have enough offense, we just need more defense. But, I feel like there's something there is like a real sort of multiplicative effect by being able to space the floor with five guys where you can't help off of any of those three. So you are basically forced to choose between leaving Jeff Green, who's been shooting extremely hot this season, or leaving Joe Harris, who's one of the best three-point shooters in the league. And I feel like, if you're forcing defenses into making that type of decision, isn't it nice to have it be Joe Harris who is taking the wide open shot, which he is converting at like I think he's shooting 48% in general from three. So I would imagine he's shooting wide open threes at a more than 50% clip. Like, isn't it nice to have that guy be the guy that's getting that shot as opposed to somebody else? And so far, even with this team's challenges on the defensive end, and even with, like if you look at TPA or something like that, like Joe's challenges on the defensive end, it doesn't seem like that's been those defensive challenges have been so great that they're negating the offensive value of doing that. And part of it is there probably just isn't a defensive option that's competent enough on the offensive end that it makes sense. But part of it is like, I think there's a little bit of a false dichotomy of like, let's get more defense in there.
I think you're right. I am going to challenge the notion that we have to have Jeff Green in that lineup. The more that I'm thinking about it.
Very fair.
I think that our best closing lineup is KD at the five, the other two folks in there, and whatever other combination susses out over the rest of the regular season. I'm going to utter a sentence that should scare any Nets fan if it's something on the top of mind of anybody in our coaching staff, but how do you maximize the value of a player like Bruce Brown? You surround him with four players that are going to be the focal points on offense above him that are all shooters, and let him roam around on defense, get weird, wreak havoc, and be in weird spots on the court that are going to throw the defense off outside of your traditional spread them and shoot them lineup. I mean, you throw the big three out there, you throw Joe Harris and you throw Bruce Brown out there, you go uber small. Maybe you've got James Harden defending the post player and you're willing to throw him out there and let him bang bodies at the end of games if you haven't tired him out by doing that in the rest of the game. And that's what DeAndre Jordan does. He gets us to a point where we can have James Harden bang around with players like Joel Embiid at the end of games and maybe keep him far away enough from the basket that the percentage shot they're getting is not that great. That could end up being our best closing lineup, like you pointed out. And as much as I love Jeff Green, as long as we're getting KD in there at the five and the big three, he's expendable.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I mean, I think right now, I mean, he's been playing extremely well. So I mean,
for sure,
you know, the optimistic take is just, you know, he's well, I guess let me start with the pessimistic take on Jeff Green is, you know, some aggression to the mean is going to happen because he's just shooting at an unsustainably high clip. And so that's just something I think we all need to be aware of.
But he's valuable outside of that, too. I think that's even when, and I'm not going to say if, even when his shooting regresses, he's still going to be a valuable player because he can guard multiple positions. He's smart. He's a theoretical floor spacer, so he's still going to garner attention out there. Like, yeah, the offensive rating won't be as good, but he'll still have value.
Yeah, I think he's a real floor spacer, too. I think he's, you know, I think he's shooting like 44% from three right now. I think he's probably like a, you know, 37-38% floor spacer. But the reason that he is like completely like, you know, if you were to pick outside of, you know, obviously not wishing anything on anybody, but like if you were to pick outside of the three main guys, you know, who going down with an injury would hurt this team the most? I think it's unquestionably Jeff Green just because of the scarcity at that position. So, you know, as we talk about sort of rotation upgrades and you know, who can play into that, into, you know, a closing lineup or who can play up with the starters or how can you inject more defense with that group? You know, I think it's helpful just to keep in mind sort of positionally sort of where somebody would make sense and how to go about that. The other thing that you mentioned too is like, they have shown a propensity to, or Steve Nash at least has shown, you know, that he's willing to try different things out. And I think, you know, if you remember in the Atlanta game, and I think this was mostly still with TLC on the floor, not Harris, but they did run, you know, several possessions in a row with Bruce Brown on the floor as the designated Trae Young stopper on defense, and then Bruce Brown as the designated like role man on offense. And that was, you know, spreading the floor with Green in a corner, TLC high enough that somebody was going to guard him. and, you know, Bruce Brown essentially, you know, basically running pick and roll with Brown and either Harden or Kyrie. And, you know, he was able to score a bunch of times off that because that was, and I think Nash said after the game, like that was a way to make Trae Young guard. So I think, you know, the good news is they're able to sort of use the chess pieces the way that they need to, you know, because of the way that they're set up. But I do, you know, I don't know. I don't want to sleep on having Harris in that lineup. The other thing that I've noticed with the Nets, and this would be sort of the last thing as we move into kind of rounding out the rotation, but the other thing that I've noticed is, you know, they seem to play the best, and this was something that happened in the Clippers game last night, where, you know, they'll come in sort of tied or down a little bit and just go on one of these runs where all they need are, you know, three or four empty trips or three or four, you know, I'll say stops or just empty trips for the other team. And they're just pouring points in because they're hitting a three every single time. I feel like in the Bucks game, it was happening where the Bucks were actually scoring most of those times. It was just like one free throw or a layup. And then the Nets were just like hitting threes in their face like over and over and over again. In the Clippers game last night, I thought they actually played some decent defense. I went back and charted from basically 6:58 left when the score is 102-97 to the Nets building a 10-point lead up from there. And I feel like that's the way this team has got separation. It's been, you know, defending hard enough that, you know, they're either wearing the other team down, they're getting a couple lucky misses, and then they're mixing sort of in, you know, like the way that I had it charted, and this is sort of my opinion, but, you know, I had three earned sort of misses by the Clippers where I felt like the Nets really defended well for the entire possession. I had three sort of freebie misses, two that were like just Nick Batum missing a wide open three, and one that was Kawhi, like, you know, taking a shot that was not super well contested by Kyrie, but contested nonetheless. And like, that's sort of all they need to get the space to be able to just, you know, put the afterburners on and rock it out. So I think some of it is like, you know, maybe you bring that defensive lineup in from like 8 minutes down to four and then close, you know, in the last bit. But I think if we want to talk about buyout guys and sort of next steps, maybe we just take that framework in terms of big three, a big, and likely Joe Harris, potentially Bruce Brown, and just kind of round out the rest of the rotation. And I mean, do you want me just to go ahead and do that, or do you have anything else you want to add?
Well, you know, I think you're looking for players who can come in and not take too much off the table and lighten the load for the big three, so they're not completely exhausted down the stretch and they can do what they do. And it's what type of buyout guys or trade market guys, because I'm not going to count Nash out on the trade, or sorry, not Nash, Marks out on the trade market, because I mean, hell, like that was a four team trade to get James Harden. Who knows what we can cook up to get some of these weirder, what might seem inaccessible players out there. But that's how I'm thinking about it before I really get into specifics, what parts of the roster I want to upgrade to accomplish that. That would be my North Star. Folks that can play in the playoffs, that can keep us rested, that can keep us competitive, so we can play a very, very healthy, energetic closing lineup down the stretch.
Totally makes sense. So typically what we've seen is the Nets running 9 deep, not 10. Occasionally they've run 10. Although, you know, like the Wizards game, I think they ran Tyler Johnson out there as well. But typically it's been 9 deep. It's been Kyrie, Harden, Durant, Joe Harris, DeAndre Jordan, usually starting Jeff Green, sort of probably playing more minutes as the small ball five. That's 6, Bruce Brown, TLC. And then in certain games, you know, it's been Reggie Perry and Landry Shamet. In other games, like last night, it was just Shamet, no Perry. So I think if you want to look at where there are sort of clear areas to upgrade, the two that stand, or the three that stand out, are just TLC's rotation minutes, Reggie Perry's rotation minutes, and, you know, potentially finding somebody that could toggle in to that closing lineup, either for Jeff Green or Joe Harris. Does that sound sort of like fair in terms of just what they're looking to upgrade?
It does. It matches what I wrote down. My two bullet points are playoff playable wing who can lessen the starter's minutes without taking too much off the table, and playoff playable center depth, which...
Perfect.
Yeah, you know, you've got a loose definition of center in today's NBA, so that could be anywhere between a guy that's 6'5" and 7'3".
Like, no, but I think that makes total sense, and I think that's in line with sort of what Sean Marks is thinking in terms of bringing in Amon Shumpert and Norvell Pell. And again, like, to use sort of the software release analogy, like, this is sort of the, you know, 1.0 or beta test version of that. And, you know, you look to sort of replace Norvell Pell, you know, you look for Norvell Pell to be an upgrade over Reggie Perry, give him a few games to kind of prove that out. And then, you know, you can look on the buyout market or through trades, you know, at ways of upgrading that backup center position. And you can look at, you know, bringing in a play, like I like the way you put it, like a playoff playable wing. And maybe that's Amon Shumpert, I suppose.
It could be.
I would guess that the offensive limitations will prevent him from being that, but worth a flyer. So I guess, do you want to dive into sort of who's available? I mean, do we want to start maybe with just the names that we've been connected to, or do we want to start with, I guess let's start there, right? So the names that the Nets have been most connected to in terms of the buyout market specifically are Andre Drummond. So we've heard from Zach Harper of The Athletic saying that, you know, many around the league just feel like it's a matter of time. We have heard from Kevin O'Connor on Andrew Yang's podcast talking about how that's like somebody that the Nets would want. Not necessarily, like, it's unclear to me why exactly that would make sense for Cleveland, aside from the fact that they don't necessarily want Drummond there as a center of the future. So that's one possibility on the table. The other one I think the Nets have been linked to most frequently is JaVale McGee, as a guy who at a $4 million salary would fit pretty well within the disabled player exception that they were granted for Spencer Dinwiddie. So you could trade, you know, just second round picks for him potentially, because you don't have any firsts. So those are sort of the two names that have been bandied about. There's also this ridiculous Kevin Love rumor that was pretty much redacted. It was like, you know, Nets interested in Kevin Love. Kevin Love only available if bought out. Cavs are not going to buy Kevin Love out. So, like, great. Thank you.
New headline. The Nets have been connected to insert Cavs big man here. You know, like, so, that's what our rumored buyout market has been.
Yeah, basically. So those are the two kind of buyout candidates, I think, both at the center position. The other guy that I think hasn't really come up in any reporting, but I think is sort of talked about most frequently from a wing perspective, is Trevor Ariza, who is on the Thunder after being traded like 50 times this offseason, not playing for them. So he seems like he would be a buyout candidate. I think the other piece of context is important to think about when we're talking about this is this year, I think, is going to be particularly weird for buyouts, just because you've added the play-in tournament for the lower seeds. You've got revenue impacts to all these teams from not having fans. And you've just got this like weird mix of congestion with the shorter schedule and with the play-in tournament, where it just doesn't feel like there are very, very many teams that are like fully out of it. If the Cavs are, you know, in the force, I don't know what they are right now, but if they're like contending for a higher playoff seed, are they really going to buy Andre Drummond out? Even if it does make sense for them long term with Jared Allen, it's questionable. But let's start with Drummond and JaVale. Do you have a preference between the two of them? Do you have any thoughts there? And then are there any other candidates, I guess, as that center that you think makes sense?
First things first, I don't want to sweep your software release analogy under the rug. I thought that was really, really good way to think about it. And you know, one of the old adages is perfect is the enemy of good. Right now, the Nets have good, or at least good enough, to not run our most important players into the ground over the course of the regular season. And we look at these lists and we try to figure out, A, who gets us closer to perfect as we see how Norvell Pell and Amon Shumpert fit into these lineups, and how maybe that helps drive some of our decisions and drive us away from a Drummond and toward a McGee, or away from McGee and toward a Drummond or somebody else. And B, it buys us some time to see how this market shakes out, because not only are there going to be less teams that are out of it down the stretch due to the play-in tournament, you're going to have the 10th seed able to compete for a playoff spot, but because more teams are going to have a chance at seeds that could have a playoff spot, teams are going to wait longer to throw in the towel and try to save some money on the buyout market. So if you look at the standings right now, if you're looking at 11 and below, and quite frankly, you should probably go lower than 11, because a lot of these 11 seeds are one, two games behind the 10th spot, which would still be in the play-in. You've got six, maybe eight teams. So really right now, you're probably looking at Magic, Pistons, Wizards, maybe Knicks in the East, and then in the West, you're looking at T-Wolves, Thunder, Pelicans. Like, it just, you know, like, there just aren't many teams out there. So it's going to be super interesting to see who falls into that category of buyout candidates and if they do it in time for it to make an impact on the Nets. So I'm glad that we didn't wait to bring in guys that fill in those two roster holes that you and I identified. And I think it's going to really allow us to drive who's worth getting creative and trying to make a trade for, or if these guys do fit in one, it's more just about, okay, whatever guy that we think is an upgrade on either of them becomes available. But let me go back to your original question about Drummond, McGee. Do I prefer one? Do I prefer the other? You know, I'd love to say that Drummond would be more fun, but I mean, we've got Shaq and a Fool all-star JaVale McGee, who still takes the ball coast to coast and tries to dunk it and still tries to run the offense through him in Cleveland, which has worked okay on possessions. You know, it takes a little bit of pressure off of those young guards, Garsex or Sexland, you know, however you want to throw it out there. But I would, especially for this team, you have somebody that has performed in the pressure of playoff situations, has won championships, and has played with really, really larger than life personalities with the Warriors and the Lakers. McGee's more battle tested. He definitely doesn't have as broad a skill set as Drummond and the athleticism that Drummond has, but he seems to be a higher basketball IQ player and more accepting of taking on a smaller, not only minutes, but impact role on the floor, thriving in that and committing himself to winning, whereas Drummond hasn't proven to be able to do that. I think his best season was an eighth seed where they didn't win a single game in the playoffs with the Pistons. Now, was that all Drummond's fault? Of course not. The Pistons have been a bit of a dumpster fire for the past decade or so. But I would much prefer JaVale McGee for his history and for the chemistry on this team.
Yeah, I think the way that I think about it is, you know, you and I were talking about, I think JaVale gives you 65 cents on the dollar of what Jared Allen gave you in terms of, like you very succinctly put it with Allen, that like what makes him, I think, so effective is it's really difficult to, you know, like with this idea of sort of centers as these like replaceable cogs on these teams, like what makes Allen unique is his sort of ability to be, you know, fairly highly above average on both offense and defense. I think that McGee is less above average on both offense and defense than Allen, but is still slightly above average. Whereas like, I think some of these other players, you know, that you could look in even beyond these guys really don't quite get there. So I think for that reason, and for the fact that he's a little bit more of a counterpoint to DeAndre Jordan, I think I would prefer McGee. The other thing is McGee to me is more attainable for the Nets, just in the sense that, you know, the conversation surrounding him is likely a trade. It seems like he's more available via trade. He fits into the disabled player exception. He's somebody that I feel like the Nets could realistically acquire either for second round picks or, you know, maybe like, Landry Shamet or you know, a smaller salary. So that feels a little bit like a better, like a safer sort of floor raising plan to me than waiting for Drummond to get bought out, where he might not, because if anybody offers anything for him, like, they'll get him. And that includes like the Celtics trying to take him into that giant trade exception. So I would be a little bit worried, like just white knuckling, like the wait out with Drummond. What would get me, so with Drummond, like, I think, you know, he's a very, very good rebounder. He is an exceptionally good elite offensive rebounder who I think has sort of drafted off that to be a little bit overrated as a defensive rebounder. The Nets don't offensive rebound very well. So it would be interesting to mix that skill set in. The thing that would excite me about Drummond on this team is like, A, he's a little bit younger. He's a little bit more athletic just generally. So that's always a plus. I think, you know, I could see him buying in to this team, particularly given that, you know, I've seen a few clips, you know, Jeff Green mentioned him on the Glue Guys podcast today. Like I've seen clips of Kevin Durant talking about how, you know, great of a rebounder he thinks Andre Drummond is. Like, you know, I could see him really focusing in. And particularly because I feel like Drummond would stand to benefit his value more by like coming to the Nets and playing a role than by coming to the Nets and like getting a bunch of post touches and scoring a bunch. Just because he's proven out that he can do that time and time again, but the knock on him has always been like, can you plug him into to a good offense? So this would be an opportunity for him to play in the best offense ever, and you know, be really effective. So that's enticing. And then the other thing I think you could do with him is you could stagger minutes between him and DeAndre and Jeff Green, and maybe still close with that same Jeff Green lineup, but you know, have DeAndre and whichever of Kyrie or Harden you're pulling back to the bench unit just run like, you know, a pick and roll and post up tandem on the bench unit, and you know, help the Nets win those minutes in a way that they just haven't been down the stretch in the regular season. I think that could help as just like a floor raiser for your team overall. So, you know, there's pluses and minuses to both of them. To me, I just feel like if I were Sean Marks, I would be more inclined to pull the trigger on JaVale. I feel like they're close enough that, you know, the bird in hand aspect of being able to get JaVale McGee for whatever the asking price is, assuming that it's not crazy high, it is probably worth it, as opposed to like waiting and holding my breath to see that Drummond gets bought out. The other benefits of McGee, sort of as you mentioned, is that would allow us to have pretty straight line connections as a franchise to that entire ridiculous Wizards team, because we'd have JaVale McGee as a key cog in this Nets team. We'd have Andre Blatch as a key member of the original Brooklyn Nets bench mob with Keith Bogans and company in like 2013. And we would have Nick Young cheating on Iggy Azalea, leading to D'Angelo Russell getting traded for, you know, 75 cents on the dollar to Brooklyn to lead the 17-18 Nets team. So I think from that, you know, sort of a Pepe Sylvia sense, that's pretty exciting too.
Thank you, Nick Young. Thank you, Iggy Azalea. Thank you, Javaris Crittenden. Thank you, Gilbert Arenas. Thank you, Tom Cruise. Thank you, Baby Jesus. We appreciate you.
Do you remember when Javaris Crittenden brought Soldier Boy to the games because he was in a beef with LeBron? And LeBron said that, like, made some analogy about, like, how he's, like, you know, he's Jay-Z and Javaris Crittenden is Soldier Boy. So then Javaris Crittenden brought Soldier Boy to some courtside.
No, I don't remember. That's incredible.
Heady times, Brett.
We need anyway. More of that in the NBA. Everybody's too friendly nowadays. I want to brush up your point about the offensive rebounding, though, because that does become really important in the playoffs, and that's something this team doesn't have. The most clutch offensive rebound that I can think about this season that wasn't a gimme that ended up bouncing off the rim and falling in the hands of TLC was one that Kyrie Irving snuck in for. And if we're relying on Kyrie Irving to get sneaky offensive rebounds, then we're probably going to be in a bad spot. And that can really swing a game in the closing stretch.
Oh, TLC had that big board against Atlanta, I think, right? I thought that was like a legit board by him. I compared it to fair. Jamal Coombs McDaniel.
I mean, he was closer to the basket than he could have been. I'll give him that.
Yeah. The one other thing that I forgot to mention on Drummond, too, is the other thing that I think he would bring is like just a little bit of a counter to if you think about the way that LeBron's Cavs teams played like the Warriors in the finals, where, you know, it was just take the air out of the ball, slow the game down as much as possible, and just bang on the glass and rebound. Like he provides a counter to that strategy, which I do think is probably a strategy teams would employ, like looking at you, Boston, with fucking Tristan Thompson, same guy, involved. Like Drummond does provide a counter to that. So even if it's not like stylistically what he brings on the court, just the fact that he's like on the roster to limit a counter move by the opposing coach is, I think, valuable, sort of in the way that like the Lakers played JaVale and Dwight Howard in like some series last year, and then like when they played the Rockets, they just didn't need to and played AD at center the entire time. I think there's some value in having that type of flexibility, even if sort of the fit between him and DeAndre is like a little bit nebulous and questionable.
Well, you know, I'd love to see how Drummond's play or impact in winning is boomed by playing around players that he has to respect. Like, does he get the Nick Batum treatment this year, where he can dog it for the last 3 to 4 years, make his money, come in, and then become potentially the third best player on that Clippers team this year, a team that's got title hopes? You could see that happening when you've got James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving saying, hey, man, if you do this, we will win a championship. And your coach is Steve Nash, and your assistant coach is Mike D'Antoni, like maybe we finally get the best version of Drummond, which is a superstar role player, a role that he has either refused or not been on the type of team to slot him in and maximize him as that superstar role player. So I think we could theoretically see another level for Drummond on this team, but betting on that, banking on that, and potentially losing out on a guy like McGee in the hopes that that would happen is an interesting game to play. But hey, like this is big balls, Mark. We're all in. We're making crazy moves. We're throwing all our picks in. Like, why the heck not, right? That seems to be a move that matches the direction and the chutzpah that this team's been doing things with.
Absolutely. So two things. One, stick a Nick Batum pin for me. I know we're going to come back to that at the end of the show.
Oh, yeah.
Let me just round out sort of the crop of centers that I think might be available either by buyout or trade or free agency. And then I think we can quickly move on to the playoff playable wing.
Yes.
And I'll throw in another, which is, I don't know, something like so the playoff playable wing I sort of see as like a maybe like a 3-4 tweener that can defend, and then I'll throw in another sort of maybe more along the 4-5 tweener side of things that's just a goon. So I'll throw that sort of position in there as well, because I do think like an enforcer would be helpful. But just to round out sort of the center crop, other guys that I've thought of, Nerlens Noel from the Knicks. Kem Birch was mentioned as a buyout possibility from Orlando, which I'd be fairly interested in, although I don't think he'll get bought out. Ed Davis, Robin Lopez, Bismack Biyombo. I put Jahlil Okafor on here, but I don't think I wanted to.
I thought about it too. I couldn't bring myself to put him on my list. I just couldn't do it.
And then Hassan Whiteside is somebody that's been talked about a lot from Sacramento. So I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on those guys or anybody? I guess Dwayne Dedman is a free agent, so that's another guy I missed. The only other guy I'd throw in there is like Noah Vonleh, who I think is like kind of like a 4-5, but I think it could help this team potentially, although he hasn't played in the league for a couple of years. Like, anybody that I missed, any thoughts, any names stick out of you from that list there?
You know, as much as I hate Hassan Whiteside as both a person and a player, I do think that he gave some fairly meaningful minutes for the Trailblazers against the Lakers, who, if we make it to the finals, it's very, very likely they'll be the team that we would play, unless the Clippers find a way to get past them, which, hey, they could. And that could be an interesting one, because he did block some shots, he hit some shots, he gave Anthony Davis problems when Davis was close to the rim, not really far away from the rim, he couldn't stay with him. That's an interesting name. There's nobody on that list that's perfect. There are certainly some folks that would be really fun to have in Brooklyn, but you just like the way to make it work and get them here just wouldn't, you just can't see it. You can't see it sorting itself out salary wise, but I mean, maybe there's a Kleber, an Al Horford, a Rashawn Holmes. Bring back Mason Plumlee, baby. I mean, Big Mace, let's get him in here. I just don't see an avenue to doing those things. But how much fun would it be to watch James Harden and Kyrie Irving throw lobs to Mason Plumlee?
As long as he's excited for Fashion Week, which I remember him tweeting when he was a rookie, and I thought that was the funniest thing in the world. And I guess in retrospect, it's really not, because NBA players love fashion, but at the time I thought it was hilarious.
Mason Plumlee.
That's my only Mason Plumlee story. Although I don't think we can afford Mason Plumlee.
We can't. That's the problem. That was on my list of, there'd have to be something crazy to happen for us to find these folks in the team, unless they do get bought out. But I believe he signed a multi-year contract, so that wouldn't make sense.
So let's talk about playoff playable wings.
Okay.
And is it just Trevor Ariza? Like, are there – so
It kind of is.
So I can throw a couple names at you. So Ariza, I think, is the most likely to get bought out.
Oh, no.
Otto Porter, I think.
I mean, come on, is that would potential. Be awesome, but it's tough to.
I think so. He's like slow as hell and not as good defensively as I remember. But he also, like, I mean, Sean Marks loves nothing more than atoning for his restricted free agency mistakes by signing those guys after. So I think, you know, I think he would be you know, a potential. I don't know that he necessarily
oh my God,
would get bought out.
Carl, that's perfect. The ultimate fuck you move would be winning a championship. Sean Marks winning a championship with a bench of Tyler Johnson, Otto Porter, and Alan Crabb.
Guess who's a free agent?
Let's go, baby, right? Why not? I mean, we've got the big three. Throw them in there.
Throw in the restricted three.
Please. Nothing would make me happier.
So, I mean, really, those two guys are like the only guys on my list. I don't know if you have – I mean, unless we want to get into, you know, free agent sort of defensive-minded guys, and we're talking about, you know, Rondé, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, Damari Carroll, Trevion Graham.
Michael Carter.
Josh Boone on Team USA. James Ennis potentially
could be like a guy that I feel like
we could trade for.
I had Ennis on there. I had Glenn Robinson on there. I mean,
okay. My note on James Ennis, sure, color me whelmed. Fits in the disabled player exception. Adequate. Not sure his value over TLC, but this is a name on the list.
Right. That's the thing. Like, you know, he's going to go out there and he's going to play his butt off, but does that do more for us than what TLC does? Probably not. Yeah, there's nobody on there that really excites me outside of Trevor Ariza. And Trevor Ariza's old.
Yeah. And I mean, he hasn't played all year. So that's like a wild card. Between Ariza and Porter, would you definitely go Porter or are you not sure?
Man, I mean, this is Porter's first year back from injury, right? And he's playing his way back into it. So you could see come playoff time, the rust is fully shaken off. He's in a rhythm. Maybe he looks a little bit quicker. That would be more of an investment pickup, in my opinion, where Trevor Ariza, you know what you're getting. And I think that this team needs to know, like, having these guys have a higher higher floor rather than a higher ceiling is more important because we've got our championship big three. So I think Ariza is the person that I would prefer at this point.
That makes sense.
Now that I'm thinking through it.
Yeah. Porter, I like for just the reason, like the restricted free agency reasons that we talked about, but I do agree that, you know, Ariza probably makes more sense just in terms of, you know, what you're getting. And, you know, I think he could outplay Shumpert just because of his ability to shoot. And I think he could potentially be a guy that you could see, you know, maybe not fully replacing Joe in the closing lineups, but in certain games, you know, I could see him taking the floor with a closing lineup for Brooklyn.
Oh, well, for sure. And if the defense is still there too, then he's another iteration of that Brown-Harris lineup that we were talking about where you get Ariza, Harris, Irving, Harden, KD out there and see what happens. I mean, that could be freaking incredible because that doesn't take anything off the table except for size.
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong. My first choice is still the suck at NBA media Sean Marks bench. But after that, I think Trevor Ariza would be my choice.
So then let's talk a little bit about so that's sort of what might be available from buyouts or free agency. If we look at trades, it's hard to construct deals for this because
it is
like we said before, like, you know, there's not really guys that are, you know, teams are looking to get rid of. If they are looking to get rid of them, it's because they're, you know, a big salary. And the Nets don't have matching salaries. So the one sort of focus that I had, and I will put my sort of personal emotions about it aside, is what is Spencer Dinwiddie's value as a trade asset? And it's a really interesting question because he is somebody that I think has pretty clearly proven over the last 2 years that he is more valuable than his contract. So regardless of sort of like, you know, like, no, he's not necessarily like a franchise point guard or anything like that, but he's somebody that's getting paid $12 million to essentially do like $20 million worth of work. So that is valuable to teams. And that's, I think, particularly valuable to teams that are kind of on the upswing and looking to have somebody with like a really high skill set as a creator, but, you know, not necessarily be the main go-to guy. He's also shown a willingness to kind of defer, although granted, like, that's to Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, you know, would he do that in every situation? I don't know. But I think he's in this weird conundrum because I think he's the type of guy that a lot of teams could use and a lot of teams would want. But because of his contract situation, I don't know that he's the type of person that a lot of teams would want to trade for. And that's specifically because, you know, he has an opt-in for this year. So he doesn't really have value as an expiring deal because he could opt in. And he's coming off an injury where you might think that he would. But at the same time, he doesn't really have value for next year because he might not opt in because it's a pretty soft free agency class. Like, you know, he is his own agent. So, you know, his risk tolerance might be a little bit different for something like that than other players. He's definitely somebody that's shown a lot of self-belief and is willing to bet on himself. So it's a really interesting, you know, scenario. I don't see a lot of teams willing to kind of take the risk on him. The one team that he was linked to him in the offseason that I do think would make a lot of sense as a trade partner for him would be Dallas. I think he makes sense as somebody you could play with Luka, and he could also run your, you know, or he could run your second unit. He's at a salary where sort of when those guys are needing to get paid over the next few years, he's a piece you could fit in. He's somebody that I think one of the luxuries of playing, you know, like, they're not a great defensive team by any stretch of the imagination. They have somebody like Josh Richardson who you can kind of plug in as a defensive minded point guard. But I think Dinwiddie has shown that he's a fairly capable defender. You know, he would be an interesting guy to talk about playing over Harris on this team, for instance. But you know, he is okay, at least average as a defender. And by virtue, like if he is playing in lineups where he is like truly the point guard, you know, he's 6'6". And so he, like, just by virtue of the fact that he's big, you know, can sort of play up as a defender as well. And Dallas, I think, would be able to put him in that situation. We know that they had interest in him over the offseason. So that's sort of where I concentrated my potential Dinwiddie deals. And there are sort of two that I put together that I'm wondering sort of what you think about. So one would be, and this is, you know, really peanuts on the dollar, would be Dinwiddie and maybe you throw in somebody else for just to match salary for James Johnson. Johnson being an expiring deal. I don't think he's a ton of value, but he's in a position that the Nets need. Like we talk about, you know, Jeff Green going down, how big of a deal that would be. You know, he's somebody that comes in and sort of fills that role as like a stretchy four, kind of big five. He's an MMA fighter, so that's a bonus. You know, I think he can kind of goon it up for rebounds and things like that. I guess, what do you think? So that's sort of option number one, or that's sort of one end of the spectrum. That's like maybe a sell low on Dinwiddie. And then your sell high would be Dorian Finney-Smith, who is on, I think, you know, two more years on his deal for $4 million a year. So you, like, in addition to being a piece that I think fits very well on the court, is also at an incredible bargain and somebody that the Nets could, you know, continue to employ going forward. Like would bring value for this year's team and next year's team. And then, you know, you'd take somebody else to match salary, like Boban or something like that. Boban is the only one that sort of made sense, even though he doesn't really make a ton of sense. I mean, he would become the mascot essentially. So that's my sort of sell high. Do you like any of those? What are your thoughts there?
I mean, give me Boban versus Embiid in the playoffs all day. And, and especially Boban versus Tobias Harris. Boby versus Toby versus Boby and Toby.
Oh,
I mean, this guy, just high comedy there. He'd pick him up.
Toby wouldn't be able to handle it.
No, he wouldn't. He wouldn't be able to handle it. He's not hitting game winners over Marjanovic. The James Johnson thing depresses me a little bit, even though he is a fun guy to have around teams, and I'll always associate him with that epic Miami Heat close to the season that led them to overpay way too many folks and have to go through a couple seasons of mediocrity before they enticed Jimmy Butler to come down there because he loves practicing every day of the off season and never takes a day off and makes his own coffee. I think that this will, if we are going to make a trade with the Mavs, and I like this trade because we've got the three ball handlers that we need. I didn't like this trade before the James Harden trade. I think it depends on where the Mavericks sit for this season. I think if they get to a point where they're saying, hey, even if we're healthy and we're playing at our best, we're not a true contender, we're more of a fake contender. Cool. Okay. Let's take a risk. Let's get a guy that's not going to play this season, and let's make the prospects of our team next season the best. Yeah, I'm willing to give up Dorian Finney-Smith to the Nets to do that. But if they're looking to go all in on this season, James Johnson isn't really an important part of the team, then that's the trade that materializes. So I think that if the Mavs do pick it up and start playing better, the best we're going to get out of them this season is probably going to be James Johnson. But if they don't, then they might be a little bit more willing to part with a Dorian Finney-Smith, who isn't part of a team that's a championship contender anyway. So those are my thoughts on those potential moves. Do I love either? Not really. Do I hate either? Not really. And because Spencer Dinwiddie's trade value is so erratic right now, it's like in football where the flag is thrown on the defense and the quarterback sees it right away and you get a free play. Like, that's what trading Spencer Dinwiddie is like, because it's impossible to assess what his value is right now. And even if he comes back and he has a couple all-star seasons, it doesn't mean it was a bad trade, because how do you know he was going to get to that level? So I think Marks has a free pass to get really weird with the Dinwiddie trade. I was thinking about other teams. Actually, let me hear your thoughts on that first before I go into other teams that we could throw Dinwiddie at.
I mean, would you do the Johnson deal? Like, and I would assume from Marks, like, I mean, well, you can bring up other teams, but like, I would assume, you know, Marks is canvassing the market and looking for sort of the best deal available. Like, if that is the best deal available, would you do that over not trading him?
I would, because who knows how long our window is? Who knows when one of these guys is going to go down with an injury? I'm not a fan of the wait and see approach with this team. I think it's try to maximize our potential to win a championship this season. And if the best guy available to do that is James Johnson, and we got to give up Dinwiddie to do that, it's going to definitely be a much better trade for the Mavericks and help them out longer term. But we're not thinking longer term right now. We traded all of our first round picks. We're all in on this. And hell, if James Johnson's the only guy available, then I like it. If he's not the only guy available, then I don't like it.
Cool.
That's how I'm feeling about it. I think you could throw Orlando and New Orleans in the mix for Dinwiddie candidates as well, because Orlando, Fultz went down. He's not a shooter. He's probably not their floor general of the future. But even if he is, Dinwiddie's a good guy to show him the ropes a little bit and take a little bit of the pressure off. And maybe that finally gets Aaron Gordon to Brooklyn and makes two or three fans on Twitter happy. And then looking at the Pelicans too. I mean, you have friend of Kevin Durant, the Fokker himself, Steven Adams. And what if we finagle the way to get Mr. Adams over to Brooklyn? Talk about offensive rebounding. And then you've got some OG Thunder members back with KD to say, hey, Serge, you picked the wrong team.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know if Adams is really feasible given his contract, unless you're like also trading DeAndre Jordan. I mean, I guess he's only $17 million next year, but he's still like a $29 million contract this year. So I don't know if that's going to work.
This year doesn't work
with Dinwiddie. And then the Gordon deal. I mean, I'm like so over the Gordon stuff. I guess it would be Dinwiddie plus maybe like a Shamit. That might work. I'm just punching it in the trade machine real quick.
Well, and it's like, what are you getting with Gordon too? Are you getting the chance that he's a slightly better Jeff Green at this point? Because that's really what it seems like. He's super athletic, and hypothetically, he could be an incredible defender, and he could be somebody to play alongside Kevin Durant in the small ball lineups. But we've never seen him fully bought into. He's another guy that's better as a superstar role player. We've never seen him on a team that can put him in that role and has personalities on the coaching staff and on the team to keep him aligned. So that's another one where you, similar to a Drummond, where you could see him coming in and then all of a sudden playing himself into a massive next contract because he's part of a winning team and he's a key cog in the wheel.
Yeah, I guess Dinwiddie, Shamit, and like Claxton or TLC would work for Gordon. I think I would do that. I mean, just from a positional standpoint, I do think it makes sense.
I do too.
So yeah, I'm not clamoring for Aaron Gordon by any stretch of the imagination, but like for a team with no picks and no matching contracts, like, you know, that's a decent way to upgrade it, I suppose.
Right. I mean, and that's how I look at it. That's not a trade that I would have done prior to the Harden deal, but now that we have James Harden and Spencer Dinwiddie is way more expendable. I don't think he was as expendable as people thought originally. Then yeah, I mean, let's just see if we can get somebody that makes a little bit more sense on this team and helps us out this season. And it's crazy to be thinking like that, but that's the position that the Nets are in right now. Also, I really wish we were in a salary and salary cap position to make a play for Harrison Barnes. He would be perfect on this team. And you get redemption from the man that KD replaced in Golden State to win all those championships. KD brings him in, gets him a chip in Brooklyn. I mean, that's a nice story too.
So there is one way to do that.
Oh no.
And this was a question that I had on my sheet.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And
let's talk.
I
would love this.
I think. I'm double checking the salaries here.
I want this very, very badly. So if you can make this work.
I don't know that you do.
Oh, no.
it would be Harris and change for Barnes.
Yeah. Okay.
And listen. There was some fucking Joe Harris slander going on Nets Twitter last night, and I will not fucking stand for it. I will tell you that right now. I am swearing, Brett. I am swearing. I was angry last night.
What was the slander? What were they saying?
Oh, they were just like, oh, he's getting cooked out there, blah, blah, blah. I was like, yeah, you know what? Like, Joe Harris not able to defend Kawhi Leonard one-on-one in isolation. Bummer. Like, too bad weird. There's nobody else in the league that can't do that. But yeah, that deal crossed my mind.
Yeah, what team doesn't have a guy that you seek out in the pick and roll and try to run plays against? There's always going to be somebody.
The problem for the Nets is that they have four of them on the court at any given time. So. So that's where the issue is.
That's why we need Harrison Barnes or our Lord and Savior Aaron Gordon. Oh, man.
So yeah, would you do that deal? I'm not emotionally really prepared to even contemplate it.
That would suck.
I certainly don't think I could handle losing Dinwiddie and Joe in like the same swoop. Not that Dinwiddie would be in this trade, but like, whew.
It really makes you wonder what the big three thinks of Joe Harris. Do they view him as expendable or do they view him as an integral part of the team? I mean, they're clearly committed to running plays for him, getting the ball.
I think that I really feel like KD especially has kind of taken him under his wing. Like when you watch him sort of chatting him up and giving him, tips and stuff like that, coming into timeouts. Like, I think especially, obviously DeAndre too, but like, I feel like he's thoroughly in the fold. I don't think that they would consider him like completely untouchable at all, but I think they're happy to have him there. I think they would look to make upgrades in other ways.
Well, and that's such an interesting trade to think about too, because you're taking a guy that does one thing incredibly well and you're trading him for a guy that does a bunch of things like pretty okay. And and like, what is that? If you have three superstars on your team, is that a better look? I just don't know.
Well, and to your point, like that sort of gets at the sort of additive nature, like adding a defender who is like, a very good defender. But also sort of positionally maybe more reasonable to a Nets lineup as opposed to Joe Harris, who is like not great as a defender and also playing sort of up a position too. So worth having a think on, I think.
Well, that's why the same reason any Dinwiddie trade is going to hurt, because if you look at it in a vacuum, whatever team we trade with is going to get the better end of that deal. But it's going to be a necessary switch for this team.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, I feel like we've
we have. It just
really talked ourselves into a dark corner here, but
it's a coping mechanism, Carl. We're probably going to trade one of those guys. We don't want to. Does it make sense for the team? Yes. Is this a 1 year window? Hopefully not, but we got to treat it that way.
I mean, I think it's at least a 2 year window, like this year and next year, but yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I'm going to skip my Batum thing, but you know, TLDR on Batum. I did go back and watch like most of that fourth quarter run, and every single possession, the Nets were just picking Batum's guy and just fucking torching him. So
awesome.
That, you know, what felt like sort of the Nets Twitter revenge game, because everybody was all flipping out, having crazy anxiety about, you know, not signing Nick Batum. And I thought that was ridiculous. And then Nick Batum obviously is, you know, shown to be like kind of actually really good and sort of exactly in a position of need that the Nets had. It was a little bit nice to sort of get the like reverse revenge on and watch him get, you know, hunted out as I was rewatching those clips. So like the Harden step back three, the Kyrie three, the Kyrie Euro step into a triple Lutz off the backboard with English, you know, skip pool shot layup that he had, and the KD three, where I was like just walking on the treadmill and saw him get the ball basically like at the logo, and I was like pull up in his fucking face, and KD just did nail the three. So much fun. All happened on Nick Batum.
That's a beautiful thing. We got to get revenge. The Nets have to get revenge for our buddy Kevin for Nick Batum's contract and the wasted years in Charlotte.
Absolutely. So Brett, I think with that, we will sign off for the day. You want to tell the people where they can find us?
You can find us sitting in our apartments, just like everybody else, and occasionally going to places where you can stand far apart from people and wear masks. But if you want to find us on the ethernets and the etherwebs and the intertubes, or the inner tubes, really, because in some places it's cold and you can go sledding on inner tubes, which is always my favorite because your butt didn't hurt when you went off the jumps. You can find us on Twitter at Russell and Fro. You can email us russellandfro@gmail.com if you have any questions for us, which, you know, hey, like we're wealths of knowledge here if you can't tell. And you can listen to us on any podcast medium of your choice. You can tell your Google device, your Amazon device, whatever corporate overlord you want to choose. You can look us up on Google Podcasts, on Stitcher, on Breaker, on Apple Podcasts. I'm probably missing a few in there. There's so many different apps out there nowadays, and my phone probably has all of them. So yeah, that's where
Jesus Christ, Brett. It's 11:40. Wrap it up.
Yeah.
With hard knocks, better than Berkeley. They said you murked me by the time I was 21. That shit disturbed me, but you never hurt me. Hello, Brooklyn. If we had a daughter, guess what I'ma call her? Brooklyn Carter. When I left you for Virginia, they didn't offend you, cause you know I only stepped out to get dinner. Hello, Brooklyn.
How you doing? Where you going? Can I come through? I can't. I'ma be your buddy. You be my lady. And have my baby. You got my cows. You got me crazy. Whatever you
and that's right back.